ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the place where music lives, the Hall! My name's Dick Beach, and I'm Vice President for Programs here at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall. On behalf of myself, the board, our staff, and our fabulous volunteers, thank you, thank you, thank you for packing it out this evening. I mentioned, yes. I mentioned volunteers for a very specific reason. If it weren't for the folks that on a regular basis back us up, they show up, they're the ushers who are here, they're people who do projects for us, they do yeoman's work. We absolutely appreciate those people and hope that you'll consider joining the hall. You'll find inside your programs this evening that we have a complete schedule for the year as well as a membership form. So we hope you'll take the opportunity, and if you enjoy yourself, that you'll join the hall and help us support bringing more shows like this in Detroit. We also have to thank all of the other people who make this happen, and that includes the folks who sponsor us on a regular basis. This evening in particular, the Times Union and Metroland are media sponsors, and if I do this correctly, our major sponsor for the evening is the classic rock station, Pix 106. Thank them very much. Please be sure to take care of them. And finally, if you take a look at the schedule, I'd like to point a couple of programming items that are coming up later in this fall and coming into the spring. In just a couple of weeks, the fabulous Doc Watson is going to be here. Doc has been here before. If you haven't seen him, please make sure you come for that show. On the 2nd of November, actually being sponsored by one of Pix's sister stations, the channel 103.1 is the Reducers. They'll be doing The Great Works of Literature, Abridged, and they are hysterical. It's a fun evening. We also have coming up Judy Collins for the holiday season. In February, we have a fabulous show that's going to be taking place that has a number of items at the Arts Center in downtown Troy, and that's going to be featuring the Tibetan monks. And then coming up in April, a guitar player you will not believe if you've never seen him, Mr. Leo Kottke, is going to be here. Please be sure, if you haven't already, that you head one flight out here and partake of t-shirts and hats and the like, because if you're a pack rat like me, you've got a complete closet full of them and you need more. And in the meantime, enjoy yourselves. Thank you very much for being here. Ian will be out in just a few moments.
I'm supposed to pick up the one that says, shit face. Well, there you go. That was a great start. That was a piece called In the Grip of Stronger Stuff from an album called The Divinities album. Just to wake you up and get me in the mood for the introduction to my co-host this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, from Pix 106, it's Wolf! Hey! There he is! The man himself. Good to have you with us. Elbows, rubbing elbows all the way. Fantastic. Well, there you go.
How am I? Am I working? Beautiful.
You're working.
How great is it?
You're not getting paid, but you're working.
I'm not? Good to see you. How great is it to have Ian Anderson here at the Troy Cities Bank? What really amazes me is, here's a man who has, thank you, sold upward of what, 60 million records?
Well, according to the my bank manager, I think it was only 45 million, but you know, somewhere around there.
Yeah, well, and throw in Napster and how many you lost there, but still. 60 million records, and he actually has the, you know, this is a bit risky doing what Ian's doing here tonight, and I just thought it was incredibly innovative that you put together this type of interactive show, so let's give Ian a big round of applause for that.
Thank you. Part of the reason I'm doing this is because I would love to go to a concert and see Rubbing Elbows with Sting, or Rubbing Elbows with Ozzy Osbourne.
As long as you didn't have to have sex with Sting, because that could take all night.
Yeah?
Not that I know personally, no, but he's...
I heard about that. He's a slow starter, but he moves in for the kill after a couple of hours.
Yeah. I won't ask you how you know that. By the way, Ian, where's the salmon?
The fish.
Not a fish in the place! For those that don't know, Ian is one of the world's largest salmon farmers.
It's something I've been doing for a long, long time, back about 23 years ago, studying aquaculture. And it was really because I liked eating fish, that was the main reason. I just thought it was good stuff to eat and healthy, and so I started doing that. But I don't really have a lot to do with that. I've got folks doing that stuff for me. I decided in later life it was a whole lot better to concentrate on being a musician, because sooner or later that joy will be taken away from me as the physicality of old age takes its toll on flute playing and strumming the guitar.
Well, so far you're doing fairly well, I would say.
Well, yeah, but I've got a couple of years to go, I think, yeah.
You know, yeah, sure, I
got it. But you're right, there's no fish here tonight. There's a telltale, slightly fishy smell coming from this cushion, but...
Yeah, I'd like to thank the Super 8 Hotel for the couch and whoever's room they happen to steal it from. We'll try and get it back on time. Also, I'd like to say hello to Mr. and Mrs. Lincoln. You would think after that, people would be a little skittish about sitting up there. But this is a great hall, and Laura, who's running the hall, is doing a great job bringing in innovative acts like this. They actually were telling me before about this. So there's a group of Tibetan musicians that's going to come in. And that sort of leads me to a question I wanted to ask you about some of your solo work that you've done. You're very influenced by some medieval music. How did you get interested in that? I know you were one of the many Scotsmen or Englishmen that started off going to art school and somehow made it into rock superstar. There's a few others like yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
But where did medieval come from?
Well, I guess just a sense of having coming from a country that has a long history, a history of music, a history of Shakespeare. He's an old guy now, but he wrote some pretty damn good film scripts. And it's a country where I guess you grow up and you remember, you have a folk memory of the kind of music that your forebears listened to, even though you maybe never heard it, but it's sort of somewhere in here, in the genes. So it's a memory thing that comes out in later life. You just respond, this is the folk culture of Northern Europe. But then as a teenager, of course, I was then seduced by the music of Muddy Waters. And Sonny Therry and Brownie McGee, Howlin' Wolf, John Lee Hooker, and all those people. And that was a big part of my decision to leave art school and give up painting temporarily in favor of being a musician. So I've been working on that. But almost everybody in Britain that you've ever heard of in the world of music seemed to go to art school. No one, none of them went to music college. they all go to art school, then they kind of learn something there that spins off into music.
And I'm not sure that any great artists actually came out of art school in England at that time.
Well, there were a few back in the 60s, yeah, but mostly forgotten now.
Well, I think everybody in this room is grateful that you chose this path as opposed to becoming an artist.
Well,
would you agree?
Well, there'll be a time a little while to go before pen and paper beckon. As much as my...
You got a scratch? Can I help you out?
Yeah, thank you. Just the left one. The right one's in good shape.
All right, now I don't want to get too close. What did they say about the English?
Oh, no, but I'm dying to find out. Here we go. It's a piece of... it's my waking up in the morning song.
Let's hear it for Ian Anderson today.
It's only really waking up in the morning song because it starts off with some words like that. Then degenerates into a kind of cosmic blandness that will be forgiven, I'm sure, since it's early in the set. It's a piece called... It's from the Living in the Past album, actually, back in 1971. And subsequently, just a few months ago, we released an album called Living with the Past, which is a DVD and CD of live Jethro Tull music. This actually is one of the pieces on it. You get to see me do this with a string quartet. At least one of the people who are standing here behind me. I should introduce them very briefly. We have over here on the keyboards, the button accordion, the Irish whistle, the piano accordion, is Luke Daniels. On guitars, we have a rock god in the making. He kind of just, he's getting there. It's Kit Morgan from Bristol. Behind me on drums and percussion, it's the youngest guy in the group. His name is James Duncan. And also from the favourable town of Bristol, it's Dr. David Goodyear on basses. Life is a long song, isn't it? When you're falling awake and you take stock of the new day, and you hear your voice croak as you choke on what you need to say, well, don't you fret, don't you fear, I will give you good cheer. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Yeah. If you wait, then your blade I will fail. As the verses unfold and your soul, so is the long day. And the 12 o'clock flame spins the room. You struggle on your way. Don't you sigh, don't you cry. Take the dust from your eye. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. We'll meet in the sweet light of dawn. As the tapestry train spills your pain all over your new dress, and the symphony sounds on the ground that you and the deep breaths. Well, don't you squeal as the heel grinds under the wheels. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. But the tear ends to sing her song.
like the keen anticipation for a song.
Photograph on the back, which depicted various people wearing various silly costumes, and they were supposedly illustrating the different songs on the record. And down there in the bottom right-hand corner was a rather chubby and rather teddy bear-like Martin Lancelot Barr, Jethro Tull's long-standing guitar player. And he was in sort of full outdoor winter regalia, engaged in the act of ice skating. Or was it this way? But whatever it was, it looked fantastic and really quite silly. The photographer cropped it really badly, so half of his face is kind of somewhere in another parallel universe. And this is a piece which is called Skating Away on the Thin Ice of the New World.
Meanwhile, back in the year one, when you belong to no one, didn't stand a chance, son. If your pants were on time, cause she was praying for humanity, and so won't to society. One day you'll wake up in the present day, a million generations removed from expectations of being who you really want to be. Skating away, skating away, skating away on the thin ice of the deep day. As you push off from the shore, when you turn your head once more, and make your peace with everyone. For those who choose to stay, you will live just one more day to do the things that should have done. As you cross the wilderness of standing in your happiness, you really have to break. Looking for a sign that the universal mind has written you into the passion lane. Skating away, skating away, skating away, on the thin ice of the new day. As you cross the circle of life, well, you just won't face your fight. You're a rabbit on the run. Got a salesman who's flying in the corner of the car, shining in the sunset. Look, do you ever get the feeling that the story's still and breathing in the presence? Everybody's on the stage, and it seems like you're the only person sitting in the audience.
You know what? Don't have to worry. Is this one gone dead? Let's switch to the guest mic. Mike at monitors. Want to sort this one out, of course? What has gone? I saw them change the batteries.
We need them. Hello, there we go.
Oh, there you go.
You know, I do this for a living. You think I had it figured out? That was just, you know, I feel like I've won the lottery. Sitting up here on stage, getting to watch you guys play. There's one thing that I have to bring up, and I think this is really important. And I had a chance to touch on this with you earlier today when you were on the show. You know, in the 70s, I don't know how many of you guys came out of the 70s. I'm 45 years old, and I did my share of drugs. And I think a lot of the musicians from that, shocking, I know. Hard to believe a straight-up guy like myself. But a lot of the bands, that's what it was all about. I mean, getting high, sex, drugs, rock and roll. You've been married for, well over 20 years. You never did drugs.
Well, not yet, but it's, you know, it's...
When do I ask for the joints? What part of the show is that?
It's in there somewhere. But no, it's just one of those things I never got around to doing, partly because when I was back to art school, you know, when I was 16 years old and I started drawing and painting, there was a guy working next to me. He was a little bit older than me, but he was shooting up heroin, you know, so this was part of the world in which, you know, not in which I lived, but it was around. And later on, as a musician, of course, they were dropping like flies around the time I started. Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, and then, of course, Keith Moon and John Bonham and folks like that. So it pretty much scared me.
Where I'm going with that is, I think it's really important that people know that you can create great music and you don't have to be stoned to do it.
Well, in my case, we'll never know.
Yeah, just think of what you could have been before you had gotten high.
You know, there's plenty of time for this drugs thing later. You know, I mean, if it's as great as everybody says it is, or was, in your case, then, you know, something to look forward to in old age, isn't it? I mean, you get completely mindless 24 hours a day. And, just don't buy any of the records that I make.
Well, we've learned that from Mick's recent solo album, haven't we?
Have we?
Have you heard it?
No, and I feel guilty about not listening to it. I should have gone out and bought it.
Yeah, don't feel bad for Mick. Yeah,
it was a tough
life. He's been knighted. He's very happy.
Yes, and he waited a long time for that and was getting a little bit irritated, I think, because old Paul McCartney and, of course, Elton John, they ended up there before him.
Well, what?
Sir Mick had to wait in line.
Well, what about Sir Ian Anderson?
I don't think there's much chance of that because... No. You've got to be so famous and so rich that they can't ignore you. And in the case of those guys, you know, that the Queen had to accept, or the Prime Minister, who's actually the fellow, it's our President Blair is the one who actually puts it to the Queen, we should knight these people. And the Queen just kind of goes along with it. As long as they haven't had anything too obviously nasty they've done in the last few years, it's okay to have such a bad
Sir Keith Richards is never going to happen.
Well, it could, but then he's just not the main man in the band, and it's a bit upsetting for the rest of the Rolling Stones that Sir Mick got his title, and poor old plain Mr. Keith, there's just no chance, and he'd be a much better guy, because he looks grizzled.
Well, it's the old joke, if there was ever a nuclear blast, two things would live, roaches and Keith Richards. He almost can't be destroyed, it's amazing. But I wanted to bring up the point about drugs because I think it's really important to talk about creativity and being creative. And God knows you've written, you know, to me, you're as well known as Mick Jagger. You came from that whole Led Zeppelin, Rolling Stones era. Aqualung is one of the classic rock songs of all time. And you did it in your own way. You had your own sound.
That's, it's probably not because of choice. It's just that, you know, if you're an untutored musician, you do what you can do in your own way. And in my case, I never learned to read or write music or had any formal musical training. So what I do is, at best, you could call it idiosyncratic. And at worst, you could just say it was a lucky break because I just do what I can do. And half the time, people like it. And half the time, it's good enough for me.
I think you're batting a little bit better than that.
Oh, well. It's very kind of you, but some of the stuff I've done, I look back on it and I can see the ugly parts of it, or the amateurishness, or the naivety of it. There are other things that I'm quite proud of, you know, that I think,
sure,
yeah, maybe half of the stuff I've ever recorded, I still listen to it and I think, that's okay, that's pretty good, then I'm happy with that image.
I have an interesting question for you. Would you recommend somebody who wants to learn to play the flute that they, you know, being self-taught, you obviously didn't take on any, you know, you didn't get, your vision was not narrowed by having learned how to read music and study flute in a traditional way. Do you think that gave you more of a willingness to go out and try stuff which had never been done before, like flute as a heavy metal instrument?
Well, I think what gave me the inspiration was actually not the flute or flautists being the strange creatures who play the flute. it was actually Eric Clapton is the guy you have to blame for my piercing, shrill, fluty noises. Because when I was 19 years old, I heard Eric Clapton. I was a guitar player at the time, you know, singing and playing guitar, not very well. And I heard Eric Clapton, like many people then and since, I spent some hours in my bedroom with a record player running at half speed, trying to learn these solos and thinking, I'm just never going to be that good. And so a little diligent inquiry proved that Eric Clapton couldn't play the flute first. You know, he was just like... And better still, neither could Jimi Hendrix or Jeff Beck or Jimmy Page. They were rotten flute players. So I thought, here we go. This is a chance, you know. There's nobody else doing this stuff, really, in rock music. So it was in a music shop, hanging on the wall, and I traded in my early 1960s vintage Fender Stratocaster.
Wow.
Probably worth $10,000 today. Mm-hmm. I traded it in for a $60 flute. And I got a pretty good deal.
Yeah, what you got is a totally unique sound that you invented.
Well, I just use it for...
Is the kissing ass portion of the show over with?
It kind of finishes on page three.
Okay, yeah.
Finishes on page three. We're going to do a song which is one of those obscure pieces that I have to apologize for, because back in 1972, in an attempt to utilize some of the surreal British humor of the era, I did this album, which I claimed, and was believed, I think, at the time, I claimed that it was written by a 12-year-old precocious boy called Gerald Bostock. Whereas, in fact, it was a figment of my undrugged imagination. Although I might have been high on Magnolia White, because I remember Jeffrey Hammond at the time was painting my living room. He's a bass player. He came to help out by painting our living room while I was writing the music to this piece, which we call Thick as a Brick. Only a mercifully small part of it, I hasten to add. Let me move on into another piece, which is from Living in the Past album, about my hometown of Blackpool. But more of that.
Really don't mind if you sit this one night. My words, but a whisper, you never think. I may make you feel, but it can't make you think. There's sperms in the guts, hear your lungs in the singing. So you write yourself to lure the feels, and you make me cry around the old tears, and you watch me down the road. To be thick as a brick.
Alright.
And the sandcastle that shoes are all swept away. And the tide of instruction, the moral, the pain. The elastic wrench reach rings are closer. As the last wave uncovers the newfangled way, but you choose one of the heels, and your sun tan is rambling, and your wise men don't know. Thank you. feel is so far away. I'm a bad dream and a chest. Well, if you shake your head, said it's a shame. Buckets made to bank on gumbo's monstrous painted gates. A seaweed and some castles, icy waves. Deck chairs, rubber dinghies, all those braces dangling down. A sun that spent its stoppages in the days. Buckets, spades, and bingo cockles, mussels, creamy things. Seaweed and some castles, icy waves. Dead chairs, rubber dinghies, old best braces, dangling down. A sunburned, trendy starfish in the days. All black gold.
Good old man. Atlantic City, it's a seaside resort that has an extraordinary sense of culture. It's a place where you could just go and see people being regular people and making fools of themselves and drinking too much and gambling and doing all the stuff people do. It has a certain charm because in the winter, when all the holidaymakers have gone, it's kind of a good place to grow up and to go through puberty. And it's this kind of place where, you know, you're just empty. And so bus shelters, we have trams, you know, these electric kind of tram thing. Tram shelters, back of the toilets. They were all great places for having adolescent sex. Mostly with yourself. And it wasn't until much, much later that I realized that sex, drugs, and rock and roll was awaiting. And of course, I only managed two of the three. One of the three. But we're working on the other two. This is a piece, also a little bit like Blackpool, because it's a song written about a visit that I took up to visit my father when he was dying up in Blackpool and visited him in hospital. And on my way back on a wet and windy station platform in a place called Preston in the north of England, I wrote this little song, very short. It's called Cheap Day Return.
On Preston platform, do you stop? She shuffled up her face, brushing away the cigarette ash that's falling down your pants. And then you sadly wonder, does the nurse treat you all down the way she should shut? She made GTS for your own to grab. What a nut. She was screaming, and a foreign student said to me, was it really true? There are elephants and lions too in Piccadilly Circus. Walked down by the bay of the train and some song. Hundred schoolgirls sobbing in the handkerchiefs as one. I don't believe they knew I was a schoolboy. And a beauty lady said to me, if you start your raving and your best behaving, you'll be sorry. And the chicken dance here came to play with his long red beard and his sister's weird. She cries a lorry. Walked down by the bathing on the track and some sun. Must have been 100 schoolgirls sobbing in the handkerchiefs as one. I don't believe they knew that I was Long John Silver. Stole it from a snowman. As I didn't want my hands to fare, I came upon Mother Goose. So I turned loose. She was screaming. Thank you.
start the evening where Wolf is going to welcome to the stage some scary people. Scary people from the audience.
Ian, before we do that, come here for a second. Who's the keyboard guy?
The keyboard guy, his name is Luke.
He looks deranged.
He looks deranged. Well, you know, you can ask him about that deranged okay. state.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second.
Accordion guys, you know.
Accordion guys are weird.
We're not going to hear any Aquilon polka or anything like that. So.
If you ask him nicely, he may just burst into such a thing and we can all leave the stage and go home early and have a pizza on the way.
Well, let me.
What do you say? Shall I buy you all pizza after the show? Well, the loaves and fishes is a good trick, but we can try that with pizza.
That's not a bad idea. Right, let's call to the stage a couple of people that won a radio contest. They are diehard Jethro Tull fans, Ian Anderson fans, Steve Ward and Martin Ping. Why don't you guys come on up to the stage?
Here we
Steve
go.
Ward, Martin Ping. Yeah. Josh, give these guys a hand up. Unfortunately, the music hall doesn't have any insurance. Gentlemen?
Hi there, how are you doing? Grab one of those. Nope, doesn't work. And grab this one.
It's real free.
And then sit there like this. Longest thing of my own. Absolutely. There you go. So, what brings you up here?
Well,
apart from the amazing invitation, this brilliant opportunity to embarrass yourself and probably me in public, but go ahead.
Well, that's good. That's my question a little bit too. It's good to see you in good health.
Thank you.
My question to you is, I've always been a fan of old classic 60s rock, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering what you can tell me of your recollections and how you got involved with the Rolling Stones Rock and Roll Circus back in 68.
Well, we were the new boys in town, literally. I think it'd been, I think Jimi Hendrix was the first guy who heard about us, and he spoke the word. I think a couple of guys in the Stones, from memory, I think it was Charlie Watts and Bill Wyman, who must have seen us or heard our record, and they suggested to Mick, who was the kind of organizer, I mean, Mick Jagger kind of ran the show, they suggested that he should have us on this show, which was being recorded for TV, and was supposed to be a big TV spectacular kind of music thing called the Rolling Stones Rock and Roll Circus, which featured many guests like Eric Clapton, and The Who were on, and Taj Mahal, and Yoko Bloody Ono. She was there screaming at them, dressed up in her band. I mean, she was in a sack.
Do you know that they just came out with a Yoko Ono car alarm? I'm not sure if you're
thinking. Is that the car alarm that if you're reversing, if you're backing up, it kind of goes off?
Yeah, it kind of does that.
But just before the rear tires go over. Right. In other words,
sort of like a cat being killed. I don't
care cat cats. Cats.
So, may I ask why the selection on the album is studio?
The selection?
I believe it sounds like it's a studio selection on the album.
Oh, well, no, this was all live as far as I know.
Oh, okay.
I mean, certainly what we did, I think the other guys were actually, because we didn't have a guitar player at the time, and I had to prevail upon one young Tony Iommi, who we knew, to come stand in, pretending to play guitar. I didn't know the song, so he just kind of just had a hat pulled down over his face like this, and was pretending to try and play the guitar. But they were on tape, I was live, playing the flute and singing, the other guys were on tape. The rest of the album, as far as I know, is all live
yes,
stuff.
Yes.
And The Who were the start of the show. They kind of right. blew everybody away, and The Stones, partly because it was the end of the line for old Brian Jones, the original guitar player. He was he wasn't too well at the time, and he wasn't really playing a part in the thing. And I think subsequently The Stones felt a little embarrassed because Brian died soon after the recording, and they just shelved this thing. And for years and years and years, they refused to allow it to be released. Finally released when Alan Klein, once their manager, he discovered he had the rights to it, not the Stones. So he got in touch with Eric Clapton and Who and other people and me and said, we want to put this out, what do you think? And I said, well, the other guys will do it, I'll go along with it. And as long as the Stones don't get upset and sue us all or something. But, so they reluctantly, I think, had to let it go, and it came out 4 or 5 years ago. It was, I think, a pretty good historic recollection of how unbelievably awful a bunch of guys can be stuck in the studio and kind of being a little out of their depth and out of their environment. Everybody was a little tense.
Any
it's worth buying, worth seeing.
Were there interesting stories of interaction backstage?
No, as far as I know, there wasn't any interaction. I mean, people were just kind of very isolated, and I think a little nervous of each.
It's a lot of paranoia back then, Steve.
Yeah, it was a little gentle paranoia, absolutely.
Martin, do you think again?
Yeah.
Martin, you have a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Martin, think? Thank you, that's all the time we have for me.
Thank you. Don't blow, suck.
Okay. We're not believing the sex part at this point, Ian.
Yeah,
I trip over my tongue and fall off the stage, just fall on number one. I was fascinated by your story this morning about your wheelchair race.
Yeah.
And you gave a little anecdote in there that I didn't know if I could take you for your word, so I want to look you in the eye and have you tell me it's really true. Did you really retrieve television sets from the swimming pool that the Who threw out of their windows?
I know Martin, I sort of half made it up. Martin Barr and I did actually go down to attempt to get it, but it was a deep swimming pool, and neither he nor I in the middle of winter were about to rescue a Led Zeppelin TV set. We should mention for anybody who wasn't listening to Pix 106 this morning and waking up with the wolf, there may be one or two of you out there who just didn't happen to tune in. We were talking about this on the air, which is what the question leads to.
Yeah, and just a little addendum to that, of course, Ian being Scottish, you are going to take the TV because it would save you a couple of bucks from buying one, don't you? Aren't Scots as cheap as they're supposed to be, the legend is?
Well, I think these TV sets were raining from hotel windows at one time because it was a popular habit of rock and roll bands. And why do you want to throw a TV set out of the window? What is the thrill about that? Yeah. I mean, it's just, why not, you know, soft fruit or the girl that you woke up with or something? Why the TV set? Why the lights? Why victimize the world TV set? Yes, very good entertainment. So, yeah, it was kind of half true.
Okay, that was only my leading question. Now I have a different
question. Now, the show's over at 10:30. You're aware of that.
Okay, but didn't Andy Warhol say?
Go right ahead. Question.
So, you've inspired a lot of people with your flute. A good friend of mine in the audience, musician extraordinaire, bought his first flute. A fellow named Matthew Nelson over in Paris. And now you've reached a certain respectable age, and I'm just wondering, as a parent and a teacher, because I'm totally amazed by your abstinence and your creativity, what pearls would you offer for us to be able to inspire young people to also achieve such graciousness and warmth as you achieve?
I think people do. I think this is an age in which, strangely, although it may not be all take music lessons and study music formally. I mean, we're back again in the world of, through the world of computers and the kind of easy access to making really quite professional records in your bedroom. I mean, you can do that now. 10 years ago, you couldn't do it. 30 years ago, when I started, you certainly couldn't. You know, you need a recording contract and a lot of money to make a record. You can do that today in your bedroom for as much as it costs you to buy a computer and some software and a keyboard. Hey, people are doing that and doing really well. So I think it's really the possibilities are there that weren't there before. The difficulty comes in trying to do something that is halfway original because, you know, we're now, four or five decades into what we call rock music.
Absolutely.
And really there's a danger that it goes round and round in circles. And that, maybe on the one hand, that's sort of fun. It's very cyclic so that, you know, some of you probably have children who are listening to the kind of music that you listened to when you were kids. And so it's sort of going round and coming back again, but there is a danger it just finally just, you know, crawls up its own bottom and just sort of quietly expires. Which it certainly would do if it crawled up my bottom, because I'm a pulses guy. I'm a pulse, you know, pulses, lentils. Lentils do weird things.
I do notice you're scratching a lot. Is there a problem?
Well, it's not a question of scratching so much as just kind of, you know, you just have to kind of sit so that nothing bad is kind of just. But today, I'm making this up. Today wasn't a lentil day. Today I could not get lentils. But
you know,
if I have lentils, you are not safe. These guys expire halfway through the show after being given us.
Is that why the drummer has a little cage?
He has a little cage.
Gentlemen, thank you very much, Steve. Nice job. Art, nice job. Let me help you down. Josh, if you would, thank you.
I dread more than any other, because the mandolin is one of those instruments that is really very delicate and goes out of tune very easily, but we're in luck. It's I have to apologize for our playlist because it was written back in 1969, and the days before you had to be politically correct. And back then it would have been kind of difficult for me to call this song I Don't Want to Be a Clinically Obese Person. You can't even say man. So I just called it Fat Man, and I apologize. I apologize if it does offend anyone in the audience tonight who's sort of overweight. As you're on call for being a fat bastard. Anyway, it's. The joke is on me, because I've kind of expanded around the waistline a little bit. Give it two more years, I'll be the subject of this song. Here it goes.
No chance of finding a woman.
Thank you, thank you. Part of the beauty of this interactive evening is bringing people up on stage to ask Ian questions. And I'm also going to give you guys a chance. I'm going to come down to the audience in a little while. Right now, Steve Singer, Christine Firth, I believe it's Scott McMillis. Come on up stage. Come on up and have a seat.
Hey there.
Steve, Christine, and Scott.
Sit on that sofa if you can. It's going to be a tight fit here.
There's no...
I think you really need to go in the middle somehow. It's an aesthetic thing. It looks better. It probably feels better as well if you're wanting to set up. No, go ahead. You've got to go in there. Squeeze it.
You guys can make it. There you go. Very nice.
Fantastic.
Sir, did you know you were dressed as a gold bar when you walked out of the house? The gold shirt and the t-shirt, that's nice. And you look like a Jewish accountant. God bless you.
Well, I didn't get the notification until about 3 o'clock that I wanted to.
Aha! Well, that's our fault then. You could have bought clothes. All right, anyway. Who wants to go first? Question for Ian. Ladies first. Yes, hand the lovely Christine the microphone.
Who has been your biggest inspiration throughout your career?
Probably two people, musically speaking. It would be, I guess, Muddy Waters, you know, for the kind of heart and soul stuff, and Beethoven for the heart and soul stuff too, because he was a heavy metal guy.
Beethoven, yeah,
he was. Beethoven's Ninth, you know, that's a big project, big crazy stuff. But you know, brilliant minds, brilliant organisations. Somewhere between Muddy Waters at one extreme and Ludwig at the other end. That's, I guess, what I would aspire to, you know, half of that greatness. That's what really moves me musically, is the opposites of the musical spectrum. I'm not really a fan of rock music as such. I just kind of like the edges, and then I sort of try and fill in the middle ground.
Yeah, I had read somewhere that you don't listen to a lot of other artists. You keep your...
Well, I'm not recreational, but a lot of people send me their CDs and you know, managers and agents, and I like to send me stuff because either they want me to play on their record or they want to be the opening act on a Jethro Tull tour. God bless them. And once in a while, you know, I hear something pretty good, and those acts get to do a few shows or even tours. I mean, some people might be young Dubliners from California, Gothic rock band. They've done, I think, 3 or 4 tours with Jethro Tull. Yeah. Willie Porter, native of Milwaukee. Willie's done a few tours with us, and that's great. Very gratifying to me when you hear these folks. They become part of your life.
Absolutely. I think it was a little awkward when the OJs requested that they tour with you. 2 OJs fans here. Let's go to Steve. Go ahead, Steve.
Ian, you spoke earlier about your dad. Could you tell us about your parents? Were they musically inclined or artistically inclined? Did they support you early on in your career?
No, they were classic parents. They really hated what I was doing and tried to persuade me to do something entirely different, which is not, it's not, nothing wrong with that, because it does test you, puts you on your mettle. You can prove your parents wrong, then you can prove the world wrong. And after a couple of years, you know, I guess they slowly came around to the fact that this was my proper job. And although I wasn't a doctor or a teacher or a jet pilot, you know, at least I had a job that was buying them a new house. And
I was going to say, how many gold records in did they say, we don't mind what you do now?
Well, my mother actually was, she really loved the press cuttings and the gold records and things. She actually had them on her wall. And my father was a bit of a dour Scotsman. You know, he didn't find any of this particularly endearing or amusing, but he begrudgingly said, oh, okay, having fun. But he didn't live too much longer, so he didn't get to enjoy, I guess, my growing up and my own family. I think he just about saw my 2 children when they were really, really tiny, and they just remembered him as an old guy sitting in a chair with an oxygen tank and kind of breathing his last, because he had emphysema, because he smoked too much.
How did you quit?
I quit once because you know, I could begin to feel the effects of by the time I was just 40.
Right.
And then I quit and you know, thought, I'll smoke my pipe or do something else, but it's stupid, you know, you just have to stop. The second time around, a couple of years later, I just one day threw away the cigarettes and that was it.
Good for you.
It was a 48 hours of hell. Yeah. But you know, if you can do it for 48 hours, you really have to stop.
Scott, your question for
Jeffrey Hammond, you mentioned him earlier. lot of the early albums you had. Song for Jeffrey, Jeffrey Goes to the Fair, Leicester Fair.
Yeah, Leicester Square.
Actually, a song, my favorite, Inside, you actually mentioned that Jeffrey makes three.
Yeah.
What was the obsession? Who is Jeffrey, and are you over it?
Well, Jeffrey was Jeffrey was a slightly eccentric guy that was at school with me when I was 16, I guess, and then went on, as I did, to art college. So he wanted to be a painter. And he was in the early kind of, the equivalent of your high school, you know, school band when we first started. And he got serious about art and didn't want to do music. The rest of us went on to do music, and Jeffrey rejoined. It was my birthday, actually a Christmas present to Jeffrey Hammond in, I believe, Christmas of 1970. And just as a surprise, I bought him a bass guitar and a bass amp. And he said, "What am I going to do with this?" And I said, "You're going to join in and play on the next album. It's, you know, 5 days to get to work this out." And he did. He started just a few days later recording the Aqualung album. And he couldn't play a note. You know, I had to teach him every little thing to play. But he was he had a great perseverance, and he did learn to play all this stuff. And he became really quite a good bass player, and a real character in the band for the 5 years that he always promised. That was it. He was just going to be in the band for a few years until he done that and moved back to being a painter, which is what he's done full time ever since.
For a lawsuit or anything? Always using his name?
No. He was very flattered by that, because it was an acknowledgement of Jeffrey. He was kind of manic depressive in those days, and he used to get very, very sad and kind of wound up. And the fact that I mentioned his name in his songs gave him a sense of, you know, being loved and recognized. And we have to do that to him again, because sadly he lost his wife to cancer just a couple of months ago, and he's actually really. But not in bad shape, but, you know, very, very sensitive. So we're going to kind of rally around him and cheer him up again. So I have to write another song called, you know, whatever, Cheer Up Jeffrey.
Right. You're not an attorney, are you?
No.
No.
I play one on my TV.
There you go. Steve, Scott, Christine, thank you very much. Give him a big round of applause.
Yeah, thank you.
Elbows. Let me help you guys.
I have a friend in Italy who's one of Italy's most famous, probably the most famous, perhaps the only classical flautist. His name is Andrea Grimanelli. He's a big buddy of Pavarotti's. He's Pavarotti's flute player. And we were doing a couple of concerts with symphony orchestras a few weeks ago with Andrea. And Andrea was actually really very depressed at the time, even more depressed than Jeffrey, because He'd just broken up with his girlfriend that he'd been with for 8 years, and he asked me, would I write a piece of music that he and I could play together as a duet, something uplifting that would cheer him up and make him feel better. So I wrote this piece of music, which is called Grimanelli's Lament. It's one of the most sad and suicidal pieces I've ever written. She made it feel so much worse than he was already feeling. But strangely, the girl in question, she was actually out there in the audience listening to the concert. And after the show, she came running back to Andrea and go, "Oh, darling, everything's fine. I'm sorry I left you," and all that kind of stuff. It was a really nice fitting ending to the thing. But Andrea, being, of course, a red-blooded Italian, they said, "Get out of here!" It's a piece called Grimanelli's Lament. We're just a tiny, tiny stain there, I'm sorry, but... Isn't that amazing how men, you know, they have this problem. Girls don't do this, because girls do it properly. Girls do it sitting down. Which is a very good idea, because men, in spite of the fact they all seem to be, you know, perfectly prepared to kind of, you know, have deadly aim, they just unerringly manage to spot the toilet seat or dribble around the carpet. You know, ladies hate that stuff.
Is this an introduction to a song?
It's actually an introduction to our special guest this evening, who I'm sure dribbles wildly like the rest of us. But then, of course, he has perfectly credibility to do such a thing, because he's an older gent with some experience.
Yes, he is, and he happens to be very well known in the area. Let's have a very big round of applause for firefighter John Tilton. Please give it up for John. John, where are you?
Hey, John. Hi.
That's your cue, John. He's coming, he's coming. He's a little nervous. Now, even though he comes out every show and does his thing.
Well, there we go, John, John, John. I noticed, actually, you did your introduction because I was standing in there. You just kind of hollered at these folks and they heard every word. You've got a big, big chest there and a lot of power behind you, I can see. And you also know how to command respect from these fellows. I noticed that you've done this for a while, and you know how to deal with an unruly crowd like this.
That's right.
Yeah.
He doesn't say much, Ian.
Which makes him a perfect guest, because we can just kind of fool around and wear his hat and dress up. But are you originally from this part of the world, or you come from New York City?
Where am I hat?
Are
you in the Union?
Oh no! There we go.
Well, I am actually in the Union, but of course not your Union. And your Union probably has a lot of folks. They do have to protect the rights of it, because it's a tough job.
And I do.
Firefighting and paramedic work and stuff.
It is, and I think that everybody in this room will agree that we'll never take firefighters for granted ever again. Right? Yeah, let's. Do you get any? You get any freebies?
You kidding?
Where's the dog, John? I thought you were gonna bring the dog. Doesn't Troy have a dog?
Oh, well, we used to, but I ran over it the second year on the job.
Quickly, I know. But being a paramedic, was there no attempt to revive the canine in question?
Never knew what happened.
No. Here, hold that right up there, John. How long have you been on the force, by the way?
28 and a half years.
Isn't that great? 28 and a half years. And let me just say, let me get to your question for Ian. No relation to Robert Tilton, the thieving preacher, correct?
No.
What would you like to ask Ian?
I'm getting that snaky sideways look, but either means he's got a
ask
really penetrating, difficult question, or he doesn't have a question at all, but give it a shot. Anything. What comes into your mind?
Let's...
Go ahead, hit me. Troy's got insurance.
Wouldn't count on it. How many years have you been in the business now?
Since 1969, so that's, what, 33 years, roughly speaking, which is, it's long for the life of a musician. Most folks have a year or two of success, and then that's fade away. It's not really a proper job, and I think you've done it for 10 years or so, and then you're kind of established enough that if you're still around after 10 years, you have a chance of making it your life's work, your career, and that makes it okay.
Although I think one thing that you and Ian have in common, when you go fight a fire, you risk your life, and Ian has been, unfortunately, the recipient of many on-stage injuries, especially because of the one-legged... Where did the one-legged things... How did that start? Did someone step on your foot?
Well, actually, not my foot. it was because I was I was actually a harmonica player, and I used to play the harmonica sometimes standing on one leg, because I used to, this was in the days before boxer shorts, I used to wear these kind of thongs, as they kind of wear, you know, tight little skinny
cod pieces.
No, just this is cod pieces you wear outside your trousers, just to make it look like you've got something meaningful inside there. But you know, with the kind of thong type thing, you wear that inside, and it's ballet dancers have interesting internal ways of boosting their appearance, and it usually involves a box of Kleenex or a couple of golf balls or something. I just started off standing on one leg playing the harmonica, and then people have said, oh, this guy plays the harmonica standing on one leg, and he plays the flute, so they got the impression that I was a one-legged flute player and that's sticky.
Everybody getting a good look at John?
John, I have a question for you, that you know, you work with audiences, and sometimes, I guess, through but no fault of their own, sometimes through their own fault, maybe you get a few casualties along the way, some folks that, you know, just don't feel too well, fall over, whatever. Are you, what's the best and worst experience you've had in dealing with, you know, sick audience members? I mean, is the kiss of life ever come into?
Yes, there's, we had a woman going to labor here probably about 18 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Little boy.
Oh, little boy, but everything worked out okay.
Did he get charged for two seats? You want to light something on fire, you'll be more comfortable. You gotta understand, John is sort of, you know, he's rather a shy guy, and you would never know that, would you? John, thank you so much. Give him a big round of applause. Yeah, well, give him a big round of applause.
Mission, after which we'll come back and play the second. Actually, probably won't be the second half, it's running a little late. And we have a lot of music in the second half for you. This half of the show ends with a piece originally written by a classical musician, a classical composer called Johann Sebastian Bach. And we've been murdering, ruining this piece of music consistently now for about 30 years. And tonight we're going to take it a step further and make it even more laughable. If you're a classical musician, you'll be, oh, what are they doing to this lovely piece of music? The answer is, it's going to be fun finding out. It's called Hooray.
about 20 minutes. Goodbye, teacher.
Well, you know, I'm barely a Christian. I mean, I was brought up with the mic's gone. No, it's come back again. I'm barely a Christian, but it was early on in my life, I got a little upset when people didn't observe any religious festival with the gravity that it deserves. I wrote this rather childish, naive diatribe against people enjoying Christmas too much, which I like to play because it's kind of a fun song. And I'm one of those people who just goes to church at Christmas, and even if I don't go, I go in my mind, you know, because it's kind of a happy time. It's not just about giving presents and feeling good. It's also about remembering that, what was the fellow name? Jesus also was, he was there, damn it. It was him. It's a piece called A Christmas Song. How can we Heroes of the last couple of decades is a gentleman who he had one fatal flaw. Probably a very nice guy. One fatal flaw was he just could not shake that vodka habit. He was a big vodka drinker. But the good thing about him was he kept us free of nuclear war for several years because old Boris Yeltsin, he was so drunk on the vodka he couldn't have found the button to press to send the missiles on their way. We looked for it. He would kind of say for Uncle Boris, maybe we should buy a couple of bottles of vodka for George Bush. But on the other hand, he has a difficult job. I really wouldn't like to be president because, you know, it's a no-win situation he's in. He decides to bomb Iraq and he's going to blow out a few schools and hospitals. If he sits back and does nothing, they might have a go at your schools and hospitals. So it's a no-win situation for George. I mean, he is somewhere between Iraq and a hard place. This is dedicated to Boris Yeltsin and his two left feet, because Boris wasn't much of a dancer. I'm in Red Square on CNN dancing to a young monk, a rock band, some music. He was a little uncoordinated. So hence this piece of music with varying time signatures, which is almost impossible for normal musicians to play. It's called Boris Dowson.
Ian has put together for this show, which I thought was great. And I'm not sure, we're going to bring Kevin on in a few minutes, right?
Yeah, what we're going to do first, after you finish this line of thought, which is obviously heading somewhere extremely interesting, but after you've done that, we're going to go, and you're going to go and say hi to the guys.
Yeah, let's do
and
that.
Ask them some penetrating, difficult questions that we don't know the answer to yet.
Let's go meet the man. Can you turn the lights up here so we can get these guys and all that glory? All right, I heard Ian say you're a doctor. Of?
Proctology. Proctology is David's game, in case anyone's thinking about that.
With all that gray hair, shouldn't you be in the Stones? With all that gray hair, shouldn't you be in the Stones?
I'm sure they've got enough people in the Rolling Stones.
What's your name?
David Goodyear.
David, you play the stand-up bass, is a great instrument. Any stand-up bass fans here?
He also knows he's playing a six-string bass guitar. Most bass guitars just have four strings, which is kind of easy. David plays a six-string. It may look difficult, but basically, with six strings, you've got more of a chance of hitting one, haven't you?
Are you an overachiever? Well, actually, play a little bit for us. Do a little. You guys want to hear a bass solo? Go bass solo. Extra? What'll it cost? I got money. Let's go talk to the drummer. Hi. You are?
James Duncan.
James, do you want me to reveal the secret or should I give it to myself? Keep it to myself? Okay. James is actually a woman.
But he's a damn fine looking woman at that.
Now, James, I know Troy has a reputation for being dangerous, but bulletproof glass, is that really necessary?
It's just to keep myself in rather than anything out.
I see. Do you have a tendency to sort of run around the stage with your drum?
I can be, if I'm unleashed.
Can we get a little bit of a solo?
I'd much rather you did it.
I can't play the drums.
Let's hear it for Mr. Wolf. This is a big moment. Okay, I'll bet he can.
Is that enough for everybody?
Actually, let me grab a little bit of water.
Be nice.
Oh, what did they say? I missed that.
No, they were just looking a little amused.
They're turning on me already.
Yeah.
I'm what? Wait, say it again. I'm what? Rubbish! Thank you! That's my agent. Alright. Here we have a leftover from Whitesnake. How you doing?
I'm not leftover from Whitesnake. I'll be rich.
You have no lips. Do you know that? You have absolutely no lips. Okay. I knew with all these Englishmen, one of them had to go that way. One of them. Now, what's your full name?
Kit Morgan.
Now, Kit, how did you get to do this gig here with Ian? Kit, why don't give it up for Kit. He's doing a great job.
Picked up the thing by being pretty savvy. He made sure he had his name in the yellow pages. Because, believe it or not, I did. I wanted some musicians who live close to where I do so that I could save money on rehearsal costs. And in the yellow pages, I looked up musicians, and that's where these guys all came from. Seriously. Yes. I mean, there's a lot of musicians in there, but, we screened them a little bit and picked these guys who are just brilliant. I'm really pleased to be playing with them.
Just one more quick thing, kid, for the folks. What's the name of the wedding band you're going back to after playing the game? No, I'm teasing you. You're doing a great job. Give him a big round of applause. You look really scary, man. I don't know, there's something about you. What are you, Judy Tenuta? Look at this. What is that?
It's an Irish button box.
Irish button box? Does it blow up?
support the IRA.
You want to play a little? How about a little Aquilon on the parking box?
I don't know how Aquilon goes.
You have to remember that we didn't rehearse that couple of weeks. So that's the one thing they don't know.
You mean to tell me that they're playing with you and they didn't know how to play Aquilon?
Look at the age of them. They weren't awake when Aquilon.
You're right. All right. Consider your age. Give me the theme for Barney.
Barney what? Barney who?
Barney the dinosaur. All
right.
That kid's a much older.
Just a bit of that Wild Irish stuff.
Just some Wild Irish. Give it up to the band.
Somebody that we're looking forward to playing with, because his song is pretty damn easy. So there's no excuse that we mess it up. No, this is a good moment, because we have to learn this stuff. Literally, they learn it on the bus in the morning, and I kind of just check it out around lunchtime, and we kind of make a little chart and see if we can remember to do it. And it's always a testing moment for us, being a backing group for somebody else.
Shall we bring out Mr. Thompson?
Absolutely.
Let's have a big round of applause for Mr. Kevin Thompson, please.
Kevin!
Kevin from a great band called Strange Arrangement a number of years ago. Kevin used to come in and play with us. Feel free to chat with him. This is a special moment for you.
It is. Yeah. How did you get this offer? I mean, did you send your tape in? I got a copy of your CD and listened to it. But how?
You paid me
via who? The radio station. Yeah. I thought you made the final decision.
Oh, I did. Absolutely. But I mean, it came to me via Pix 106.
Yes. Through mutual friends. Rick Beach, who I want to applaud and thank you for giving me the opportunity. Thank you. Well, that's what we ask the radio station to do, to try and use their expertise, their infinitely good taste in picking someone that would be completely compatible, and that's what they did. I guess they have good taste in music. And how much did it cost you?
About 200.
200?
Yeah. He plays thrash metal, I don't know if I told you.
Next time I'm in town, I'm going to do it for 150.
There you go.
Hey, listen, I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
Since your band doesn't know Aquilon, we could play.
We could. I've done 62 concerts with Jethro Tull during the summer, and I am now living in an Aquilon-free zone for the next 6 days. And I love doing Aquilon, but it's just, one of those things, you just kind of leave it just a little few months and then come back to it. It sounds like a song again. But if you play Aquilon, I mean, it would be, I'm sure you would really love to hear it, but I would have to kill you. And it would get a little messy. It would get a little messy. But no, we have a much better song to play.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to doing this. Yeah, there we go.
Kevin Thompson. Kevin, what's the name of the tune?
House on the Hill.
Hold on. Kevin Thompson, Ian Anderson to the boys.
Well, he's not actually going to play it, he's just going to announce it and then bugger off. Oh, no, he's not back. Yeah, a house on the hill.
These guys nailed it, sound check.
Yeah. It's good at sound check, it's downhill from there on.
On the mantle, a picture of your brother.
Imagine what it might be like to be in a hot air balloon looking down on the world. And the best thing about being in a hot air balloon, you don't have a guitar lead to worry about. I don't have to worry about it now, because I left the fucking thing on the floor. This is called circular breathing. It's one of the songs from The Secret Language of Birds. And the other folks want the Republican section, they want to be part of Southern Ireland, you know, United Ireland. You can understand their point of view after many, many years of a kind of colonial rule of the North. But these two factions, they are just inevitably going to beat the shit out of each other until it's all over. It's very sad. They meet together in an uneasy governmental way in a place called Stormont in the north of Ireland. And a few years ago when I wrote this piece of music, it was to, in some way, just bring together the idea of the cold, more severe Protestant North and the kind of crazy Republican Catholic South. So I put these two bits of music together. You recognize the two different moods of the thing. And so it's an Irish style, which suits Luke, but not the rest of us, because we're not very good at it. But we'll give it a shot. It's called the Stormont Shuffle.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is where I get to play Jerry Springer. Oh, you got to stand up. You got to stand up and show everybody your unique outfit, please. You're the latest pharaoh. Turn around, please. The mayor of Troy. Let's hear it, please. Who has got a question they'd like to ask Ian? You do? Okay.
I want to know.
Do I personally spawn them? You mean do I personally mate with fish?
Well, on a bad night, it might have been that. No, what I do actually is, or what I have done, I pay other people to do this as a rule. But yeah, trying to spawn the male and female salmon is a tricky business. And in fact, what you have to do is pretty crude. You actually get the female, who's ripe with eggs, as females tend to be, and you kind of just pick her up over a plastic bucket, and you kind of squeeze the tummy of her. Out go the eggs into a plastic bucket. Then you get the guy, who's a big kind of ugly brute, and you kind of hold him over the bucket and do... Out comes the semen, or the milt, as they say in salmon terms. And then comes the really interesting part. You get a wooden spoon. I swear this is exactly what happens. It's as crude as it. You get a wooden spoon and you stir the semen and the eggs up together. You mix them up. That is salmon foreplay. That is it. That's all you get, guys.
You know, he was touching himself during your answer. If you feel something wet, sir, run. Okay. Who's got an answer? Or who's got a question? Who's got an answer for that matter? All right, what's your name?
It's Danny.
Where are you from, Danny?
Originally Long Island. Why is it that you rub elbows? Why don't you shake hands?
Good question. Why would you touch elbows instead of shake hands?
Oh, well, about a few years ago, sound checkers, you know, we kind of make sure everything's working properly. One of the things I do is I jump down to make sure these little front fill speakers are kind of on so you can hear what's going on. Because you think the front row is a good place to be. It's the worst place. For a start, sound is often very bad. Secondly, old men like I tend to dribble a bit. So you get a fair amount of bodily fluids, some of which are saliva. And it's a messy place to sit. You don't want to be there. It's not a Jethro Tull concert. I'm fairly cool, calm, and collected tonight, but I sweat a lot when I'm doing the Tull stuff, and a lot of stuff flies around. It's interesting looking down at the audience and seeing snot hanging on the end of somebody else's nose. Oh. So, anyway, I jumped off stage at the sound check to check these things, and I twisted my wrist. It was about 15 years ago, 12 years ago. And it was, it hurt for a few days, and then it got okay again. But once every few months, I get crippled when I'm handshaking people. You know, they get a little too enthusiastic, and it really damages it. It's very painful, playing the flute and strumming the guitar. So I go through periods of time when I don't shake hands. I just had to think of another way to bond with people. You know, something they wouldn't be offended. So I invented this thing of rubbing elbows, and it seemed to work. People quite like doing that. And then, hence the name of this tour, Rubbing Elbows. It's a friendly thing to do, I invite you into my living room, and Wolf is here to rub elbows with you.
Matter of fact, I'd like to ask everybody, please, rub elbows with the person sitting next to you, just in the spirit of it.
That's good. This looks like a bunch of middle-aged chickens.
You're not rubbing. Rub. Ian, you want to take one more? Ian, one more?
Oh, one more. Very quick question.
Okay. Real quickly. I'm sorry, I have to lean over you people.
Hi, Mark from Montreal. Ian, I'm wondering about Russ Atwell and Kirk, if you'll ever get back into jazz. Was he a big influence in your flute style as you were developing?
Well, I just started playing flute, and my friend Jeffrey, that we talked about earlier, he was the one who played me the Roland Kirk album in which Roland Kirk played flute. Roland Kirk's a great, slightly eccentric jazz musician, black African American, who was converted to Islam, became Russ Atwell, Roland Kirk, before his death. He was an influence in the sense he was a little crazy, wild man. He was blind. I met him once, and he struck me as a really good kind of guy. I was my first tour in America, and he was quite supportive, even though I was playing one of his pieces of music, probably quite badly, because I'm not really into jazz. But it was a good moment meeting Roland, and sadly never saw him again. But the lasting legacy is that his wife still picks up a royalty check twice a year from my version of his song. So. Yes, that's probably the nicest way to remember Roland for me. Hurts writing out checks, doesn't it? All right, this is a piece which is from the Stormwatch album, and it's about a rather mystical place on the island of Skye off the west coast of Scotland, where there's an old stone hill fort about 1,000 years old, and the local inhabitants back then used to take their women and children into the hill fort to protect them from the Viking invaders that came up the sea loch. Norway to plunder the fields, steal their cattle, steal their women. And so the local Scottish inhabitants would hide out in this hill fort and then give their women to the Vikings, because it's a pretty good way to get rid of these very, very ugly local people that they had to marry. This is about the hill fort called Dunringham. And
weather's on the change. Ice clouds invading and pressure falling. Lions join and faint discord as the stormwatch brews a concert of kings. As the white sea snaps, the heels of the sun pray. Clear light on a slick palm as a misty moving slip and glide from a shade pack, make a mom's card lane. Call twilight as down from a heaven home. High above, highest bidder for the good Lord's throne. In the wee hours I'll meet you down by the ring hill. Oh, and we'll watch the old gods play by the ring hill. Yeah, by the ring hill. Wait in stone circles till the horse comes through. Lions join and fading the scorned, and the storm was loose. Gods and kings, as the white sea smelts, at the heels of a soft prayer, whispered. In the wee hours I'll meet you down by the ring hill. Oh, and I'll take you quickly, yeah, by the ring hill, by the ring hill, yeah, by the ring hill. Piece of bamboo that's got six holes in it for your fingers and one that you've blown at the top. And it's really incredibly easy to play and also extremely cheap, which is why I like to play. It's a piece from a recent Jethro Tull album, the last studio album, called .com. This is the title track called .com. And I have a really difficult glockenspiel solo at the beginning of this one, so please be very respectful and very quiet. Thank you.
1, I believe it was, on the album Living in the Past, we kind of swept up a series of previously released singles from England and B-sides and some live stuff. And probably the most obvious one of those was, in fact, the title track, which was recorded in the USA, in Boston and San Francisco, I think I did the vocals, and sent back to England to kind of, well, keep the pot boiling while we were away on a US tour and try and get a singles hit. A very unlikely one with a piece of music in 5/4 time and with a distinctly untrendy title of Living in the Past. So we'll do the kind of acoustic version of this one now, which is rather quiet and rather nice.
Thank you.
in our tradition to the point where we pretend this is the end of the show. And we go off stage to say goodbye, and that's it. You think you're never going to see us again. And meanwhile, you're sitting down there going apeshit, making a huge row, and we're just around the corner anyway. We're going to come back, even if you don't clap. It's called the encore. Let's give it a try. www.kazoos.com. Believe it or not, it exists and they have all these kazoos, which is brilliant. And I imagine they've got a huge number, like about 250 kazoos. It's an incredibly knocked down price. I've got to bring them along with me so you could help me in a cruel desecration of this last Jethro Tull piece as an encore. And the first thing I'm going to do is going to hand out a few kazoos to you folks, because you look like a kind of kazooing bunch to me. So, I mean, you don't actually blow in these things. If you've ever played a kazoo before, you're just kind of humming it. So, let's see if we've got some. The worst thing is the person who gets the one first is the one that I remember. And therefore, inevitably, I come back to that person straight away when it comes to kazoo solo time, and then you think, oh shit, not me, no, go somewhere else, not me, not me. What about you, sir? Okay, green ones, a lot of green ones tonight, Miss Kazoo Bear. Another green one, damn it. Green ones, green one, another green one. Here's a black kazoos are sexy. Black kazoos are sexy. A yellow one. Kind of pink one, nice for girls. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, is it for you? Here we go. There's two left, another sexy black. Right, three left. A blue. Further back. You, sir. And I'd be remiss if I didn't give one to Will, because I just know he's a kazoo. There's no good booing him. He revels in that. He likes that. I'm doing the wrong thing. He's got to. No, he loves it. You should say, well, we think you're absolutely fantastic. Then you get really pissed off. Reverse psychology, it works. This is a piece called Locomotive Breath, and it's starts in a slightly different way. So when it comes to kazoo time, don't play until I tell you. You're going to know when I'm in that kazoo mood towards the end of the song. I'll be down there. Okay. It's a little embarrassing, because it used to be a good song. It was. I used to just be very well done, and now we've got it wrecked by doing the silly kazoo thing. It was almost as good as Stairway to Heaven. Okay. Thanks really very much for coming on. I do appreciate it. We'll see you another time.
Children jumping off. no waiters, no help. No waiters, no help.
Thanks very much, thank you to our gallant blues players. You can keep those. Thanks very much to the world looking to the world in the morning. 6:106 in the morning is where we find this guy. Great, great help, thank you. Good night from Rick Daniels there on Speedy Boxes. Morgan on guitar, John Duncan on the drums and percussion. Dr. David Whittier on bass. Well, thank you for me. Good night, good night. Bottom floor at the back of the auditorium, and have a safe journey home. Bye-bye.